All right, everyone. It is episode 53 of Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the site. Hope you guys are all doing well. On this Saturday here in the first part of November, it has been a month since we last spoke. The reason for that, I became a dad for the first time and took some time off. And, 10:40 a.m. on October 10th, life changed quite a bit. And it's all changed for the better. Everyone's healthy and good. But boy, am I tired, exhausted, but overall, have a smile on my face. Things are good here. And there's so much happening in the world of MMA and UFC. So much has happened over this last month that it was time to jump back in. We have a big event going on, of course, next week in New York City with UFC 205. So we got to get back on the track. I shake some of the rust off and start getting some of this MMA news. So I come to you on this Saturday with a special edition. We talked to MMA junkies Ben Folks on Thursday afternoon. He and I talked about the MMA investors deck, or the UFC investors deck, rather, that went out from WME and IMG. I told you I was rusty. This talking thing is tough after about a month. So we talked a lot about that. We talked about Ronda Rousey and her revelations this week that she is nearing the end of her fighting career, and talked a little bit about Mexico City as well. By the time you hear this, the card may be over, so I apologize for that, but it's still some good stuff to listen to anyway. And again, I will apologize for the rustiness in my asking questions, and then also some of my recognizance with fighter names and situations and so forth. You'll hear us in the interview. I did pretty good. There are a couple times my brain just completely shut down. I will chalk that up to sleep deprivation, and we'll get better as we go on. So, without further ado, let's get to Ben Folks of MMAJunkie.com. Well, been off for a few weeks, as everyone knows, and happy to come back with a very special guest. He is obviously a longtime writer for MMA Junkie. You know him as an excellent columnist there and a great writer in his own right in a lot of different forms and fashions. He is also the excellent host of the excellent co-main event podcast with his partner Chad Dundas, who we've had on this show before, and happy to welcome to the program Ben Folks. And Ben, I asked you the first question, which is it's a real hardball, real fastball. You live in a world now, we all live in a world where the Chicago Cubs are now World Series champion, 108-year drought is over. Do you feel differently today than you did yesterday?
Yeah, I still don't care about it. So in that sense, no. I do notice that a lot of people I know on Facebook who live in Chicago and who also seem to not care about it yesterday and the day before suddenly have Cubs hats on. Wow. So I guess the world has changed in that way.
Interesting. Yeah, the interesting times that we live in. And do you happen to watch the game at all, or were you just kind of following along on Twitter like a lot of other people were?
Honestly, covering MMA over the last few years has really diminished my fandom in other sports. I just feel like when I have free time, the last thing I want to do is sit in front of the TV and watch more sports, because I do that a lot. Plus, with family stuff, I have so precious little free time that, yeah, I pretty much never watch baseball anymore, only rarely watch football, pretty much just MMA, which makes for a really weird life.
Very true, very true. Well, let's talk a little bit about MMA, and one of the reasons I want to talk to you is, actually for a lot of reasons, but primarily in the past, I'd say the past week or so, give or take, you and Steve Morocco put together a very interesting series of articles on MMA Junkie, which people can read, and we'll link in the show notes, and probably a lot of people listen to this have read them already. You got a hold of some, essentially a UFC pitch proposal from the new owners of WEIMG, essentially kind of laying out the expectations of where they look to be going. Essentially it was kind of like an investor deck, right?
Yeah, that's what it was. It was kind of after the deal was agreed to, but before it was finalized, and kind of laying out for potential investors, why you want to get in on this.
Gotcha. So you get your hands. First of all, I guess obviously we're not going to actually give up a source or anything, because that's what Twitter's for, right? But what I love when people ask that, like, tell me your source, as if like if you don't give it up, it somehow distinguished or just completely like eradicates any like validity you have or anything like that. But
I feel like your mother is a good answer to that one.
Exactly, always a good answer. So how did you? I guess did someone approach you with these documents, or how did that What can you tell us about how you got them and with the process from there?
Yeah, I mean, we got them from a source, and it, you know, these were sent out kind of widely, from what I understand, you know, to hedge fund people, potential investors. So it wasn't like it was anything that they could really, I think, hope to keep under wraps. And, you know, I've talked to somebody at WME IMG before we started running our series on this, and they seemed to expect that this stuff would kind of get out. You know, information like this, once you put it all together in a package and send it out there to a bunch of people, some of whom are going to decide not to invest, then you got to expect that it might get passed around a little bit. And it is actually a really good presentation. You know, it's got a lot of good graphics, and it lays out the case pretty well.
Yeah, it certainly does. I was really interested in the, I think as most people were, as far as the, you know, the revenue from where they're currently getting from, you know, what they call this content bucket, which, you know, includes pay-per-view and obviously you'd see Fight Pass and some other forms of content there. And kind of like we saw, like how much Fight Pass generates and just some stuff that we really haven't known about for a long time. What as you're kind of going through all this stuff when you first got it, what were the things that stuck out to you the most as, wow?
You know, what really stuck out to me was, for one thing, how much the UFC depends on pay-per-view. Still, you know, you think about, and they're moving in the direction they want to be moving, I think, and depending a little less on pay-per-view, depending more on rights fees, both domestically and internationally. But still, it's, you know, if you have to cancel a pay-per-view, that could mean the difference between, you know, a steadily increasing growth from year to year and you taking a huge hit and having to, you know, drop down a little bit in revenue that year. It was, I guess, a little bit surprising to see exactly to what extent they really rely on all, you know, 13 pay-per-views a year really delivering, and to the extent that they really rely on a couple stars, like especially Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey. You know, you can look at those numbers and see, and if Ronda Rousey is really wrapping it up like she says, and if Conor McGregor decides for one reason or another to take a little bit of a break, that's going to really hurt the UFC revenue, because they depend so heavily on those two fighters to bring the pay-per-view sales, and pay-per-view sales are such a huge part of the business.
Right. And I think that's going to be interesting, you know, going forward. There's so many people that still think that, you know, pay-per-view is dead, right? They just, because they don't believe in paying for stuff, or, you know, there are other countries where pay-per-view doesn't exist, or it's just completely different than it is here. But, I mean, you look at things like boxing, or you look at, obviously, the success that UFC has had, really, it depends on stars, and it depends on people saying, I feel compelled enough to pay for this, and it's hard for me to imagine a day when that goes away, because we keep seeing consistently, we saw last year and this year, that UFC can make some good money still on pay-per-view, and as you mentioned, a considerable amount of money by making stars and finding people that people are interested in seeing. The problem is, as you mentioned, is McGregor and Rousey without them. I wonder if this leads to more CM Punk style attractions coming in, if they start to get desperate, if for some reason, as you mentioned, those people go away. I mean, the reliance on pay-per-view, as you're kind of thinking through this, it tends to be a pretty tough thing for UFC to have to kind of balance out.
Well, yeah, and I think, too, it opens up a lot of questions about where your incentive is moving forward, especially with new owners. And one of the things that we learned from the investor deck was basically that the $4 billion purchase price, they didn't get all that up front. They got to hit some goals coming up here that are pretty ambitious goals for them to hit as far as earnings. They really can't afford to have somebody step away. It'll make it really difficult for them to hit those goals and get, you know, it's a difference of hundreds of millions of dollars. So of course they're going to want that. And, you know, that stuff, it does kind of put some of the moves in perspective, because you can't rely on necessarily building a pay-per-view business that's going to be strong 5 years from now. You need it to be strong right now. And you need some of those stars, and you put yourself in a position where you have to be so aware of what people will pay for Saturday night. I think building future stars is going to be the really difficult thing, because it shows you how important it is not just to have good fighters, because Demetrius Johnson's pay-per-view numbers for a lot of these events are just horrible. Mm. That's not enough, clearly. It has to be about personality-driven stuff. And it's difficult. It's easy for people to spot a star once they're already there. It's difficult to say what makes one person a star and one not.
Do you find it surprising that there's still a large segment of fans out there that don't understand why there's so much importance placed on the ability to quote unquote draw?
You know, I understand it in a way, because it's, if you come from another sport, or if you're used to the way other sports work, you know, the way MMA has been pitched for so long is, hey, this is a real sport. This deserves to be considered right there along with the NBA and the NFL and Major League Baseball. You know, the UFC has kind of pushed that line for so long, and I think a lot of us have internalized that and wanted to see MMA treated that way. And you kind of have to realize, like, it does not work the same way. And the other sports, just winning is enough. You know, being the very best at that sport is enough to make you, you know, rich and famous. And MMA is weird that is, you know, a kind of a small piece of getting the fame and the money in this sport. And that is kind of weird to adjust to, you know, because you're not used to thinking of it that way. Mm.
So we'll go a little bit inside baseball with this question. So you get these documents. How does it work that you and Steven kind of tag team this and put this stuff out there? Kind of you get these documents. What's the vetting process to make sure they're legit, legals involved, I assume, all that stuff. Take inside the journalism aspect of all this.
Yeah, you know, we talked to a few different people to kind of get a read on some of this stuff, because obviously neither one of us are real finance experts. And some of that stuff, you know, you almost have to learn a little bit of a different language in order to understand it. But, you know, we had different people we talked to kind of give us their perspective on it, people who have seen these kind of things before and know what they're supposed to look like, and can tell us, you know, what jumps out to them. We talked to a few different people that way, you know, had some conversations internally with some USA Today people about it. We talked to WMEIMG about it, you know, so I wanted to work with Steven on it, because Steven's a great investigative reporter, and stuff like this, I just feel like it's always helpful for us to have a few more eyes on it. Cause there's always going to be stuff that, you know, maybe you don't see at first that somebody else sees.
Right. Exactly. So you put everything out again over the last week, a few of these articles have hit. And did you hear from fighters, agents, or people in the business afterward being like, holy shit, I did not expect to see this?
You know, I don't know if there was a whole lot of holy shit, but, you know, I talked to some other people in the, you know, more agents than fighters about it. And there were some things where they would look at it and say, that surprises me. But I don't think that there were a whole lot of surprises in there for them. But I do think one of the things for them is it's been really difficult for them to kind of get their hands around an idea of what kind of numbers the UFC is doing, where the money is going, where it's coming from, all that kind of stuff. And I think there's a lot of nervousness out there about what's the new regime going to look like. And this, one of the interesting things to me about it is it really lays out what their plan is, you know, how they plan to turn this into a more streamlined, more efficient, more profitable business. And, you know, that to me gives you a little bit of a glimpse of where they're going.
Yeah, the streamlining, that was a really interesting part of this as well. And obviously a few weeks ago we saw about, you know, the layoffs, and I think we knew that some were coming, because that tends to happen obviously when one big organization takes over another, a lot of redundancies and so on. And, you know, I think some of the people that were let go up top were a little bit of a surprise, but overall I think this effort to winnow down things, especially the, I don't know what the exact phrase was, but the, not the high paid consultants, but they're kind of referring to people have outlived, long lived consultants. I think that might've been the phrase, you know, kind of just trimming a lot of the fat off. And it's, what is your gut sense on where UFC and where this organization is going to be in, say, 1 year and even 5 years?
You know, it's interesting. I've been thinking a lot about that and trying to figure that out, because I think in some of these instances, they were looking at, okay, you got to cut some people who are making a lot of money. You got to cut some people at the top, because you're trying to cut $27 million out of a $55 million base for employee compensation. You know, and also when they said that they're looking at a one-time cost of $5 million total in severance fees, that gives you an idea of you know, who you're looking at cutting. And I guess what I wonder is, are you cutting people that you didn't realize you were relying on so much, or are you cutting people where you feel like, you know what, We have somebody at WME IMG who does the same thing already. They'll just do it for the UFC now. And I don't know. I think it would be difficult to tell exactly at this point, you know, who you might need, who you might not realize you need until they're gone. And I also think, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, you know, we don't need to have redundancies in certain things like legal departments or lobbying efforts, things like that. But at one point it says in the thing, you know what, we don't need to spend as much money on marketing because we can leverage our own network. You know, WME IMG has a huge network of entertainment people. You know, you can call up Stephen Colbert, who's one of your clients, and get him to put a UFC fighter on the show, that kind of stuff. I'll be interested to see exactly how that looks in practice, if that actually does equate to you know, better marketing, or if it just ends up being cheaper marketing.
That's a good point. I'm one of the things that strikes me, and I think a lot of other people have mentioned this as well, is we still haven't, we don't really know who the, we kind of know who the face is of this new organization with Ari Emanuel and obviously Dana White to an extent, but there's been, it's crazy, there's been no press conference for such a major sports deal that was covered all over the place. And you think of, like, in traditional sports, you know, we mentioned the Cubs before, and just, you know, sports is at a certain level is big business, and nobody likes talking about big business more than owners. Rich guys love talking about their plans or bravado, just all this type of thing. We've seen this time and time again with franchises all across the world. There's been nothing. It's been radio silence, and other than just these kind of things that come out and work like you guys have been doing at MMA Junkie with stories like this. Are you surprised we still, as of yet, have not heard anything from these new owners?
You know, I keep waiting to see it more than I'm waiting to hear it, because I think that, you know, they obviously weren't trying to jump out and tell us any more than they had to from the beginning. You know, I mean, this, we're looking at this investor paperwork, which came, you know, weeks after the UFC was telling its own employees, hey, this rumors of a sale is just crazy media talk. We're going to sue these reporters who put it out there, so don't worry about it. So I'm not too surprised that they weren't then immediately really eager to tell us all about it. But I'm waiting, I guess, to see a little bit more of it in practice. And that's what I hear when I talk to, like, managers and agents. They say, like, we're waiting to see some stuff where it's clear that this decision was made in LA and it wasn't made in Las Vegas. And I, you know, I don't know if we'll start to see that in subtle ways or if we'll start to see it in really, really unsubtle ways. But I think that's what a lot of people in the industry are kind of holding their breath for right now.
Yep. Yeah, I would agree with that. And one of the people we talked about that's crucial to their business going forward is Ronda Rousey. And Ben, I don't know if you're a big fan of Ellen DeGeneres and watch her show every day.
Yeah.
Set on the DVR every day, huh?
Oh, yeah.
So for those that don't know, she was on Ellen Monday or Tuesday of this week and basically talked about her fight coming up, obviously, with Amanda Nunes coming up here at the end of the year. She finally returns after a long absence and a lot of questions about kind of what she's going to do next. And essentially said that this is going to be one of the last few fights in her career, that she's thinking about the end. Didn't really give a number, a date, anything like that. But we seem to be at the last handful of Rousey fights, and we really don't know what this means. But we know that she's coming back here in just less a little over a couple months time. When you heard that she's thinking about the end, were you? I wasn't that surprised. Were you?
No, and I really can't blame her too much either. You know, if you have other options and you don't have to go and get punched in the face for a living and depend on, you know, a couple of huge paychecks, assuming you don't get injured, I can't blame you for wanting to go do something else. I do, though. I wonder, you know, when she says, like, hey, this is one of my last fights, that could mean a lot of different things. So I don't know what it means. The interesting thing for me is going to be that, you know, especially even in this lender deck, the WME IMG lists Ronda Rousey as one of their key clients. You know, when they list a bunch of clients basically to show you how big time they are, they list Ronda Rousey. And so it's going to be interesting to see what kind of fights she gets offered. Because when I hear her say, this is going to be one of my last fights, I think, like, okay, so you're going to fight Amanda Nunes. And if you tell yourself afterwards that you're done, and then they come around and say, hey, what, guess what, you want to make a quick buck against Gina Carano? I mean, yeah, she's going to say yes to that. If they say, you want to fight Cyborg? You know, probably not. Probably going to be busy. Probably just, you know what, shooting just started. I got to get back to you.
Right.
And you wonder, you know, if it were in another sense, you could see the UFC saying, you know what, if the Golden Goose is going to walk out the door anyway, then we're not concerned about saving anything or, you know, leaving anything in the tank there. Let's go ahead and try to make that Cyborg fight happen and just let the chips fall where they may. But if she's also your client on the entertainment side, maybe you don't do that.
It's a great point. And this, I mean, this, this Nunes fight coming up is, you know, it's not a gimme for Rousey at all. I think for those, the uneducated that may not follow the sport may assume, oh, she's going to come back and win and all this. And there's certainly a case to be made for that. But to me, in order to keep her as a valid draw and just, you know, top of the sport and to keep that, I think she has to win. I can't imagine kind of the atmosphere around her if she loses, you know. I just think of that star quality and the protection and all that. So that's why I think you're right. I think they'll try to keep her away from Cyborg as much as possible. Maybe if that's going to be her last fight and, Cyborg wins, she would try to get some of the rub off her. But, you know, she has to win. I think she has to win in December. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're already wondering how much of the luster has gone off after losing to Holly Holm and then kind of just going quiet for a while, to where I think a lot of that enthusiasm maybe that the non-fight fans had for her, maybe some of that went away. She comes back and crushes Amanda Nunes. Maybe all that comes right back immediately. But, you know, you always wonder what somebody's going to look like after a layoff like that, after a loss like that, where some people that can really puncture their confidence, and who knows how much they are really depending on that confidence to get them through. I think also, you know, everybody is going to be interested to see, you got Amanda Nunes, who is with American Top Team now. You got Ronda Rousey, where her training situation is a little bit of a question mark. You know, style-wise, I think Ronda Rousey should beat somebody like Amanda Nunes. But if it comes down to who has been better prepared and who has been more focused and who had the better people around them heading into the fight, then you got to give the advantage to Amanda Nunes, I think.
That was a great segue, because that's exactly what I was going to ask you about, was the coaching aspect, right? And there's been a lot made of this, and whether, you know, Coach Edmonds' team is exactly prepared to handle Rousey because of their, you know, lack of success with a lot of other fighters, and are they fully equipped to get the most out of her that another team may be, that may just, you know, not be willing to put up with some of the superstar stuff, or just maybe willing to push her more, have a bigger team around her, challenge her in different ways. And you know, I wonder if years from now, again, depending on what happens with this Nunes fight, I wonder if years from now it's going to be one of those things we look back and be like, huh, I wonder if she had gone to a different trainer, maybe a different school, something like that, which has changed, would we still have the same outcome? Would it be better? Would it be worse? It's kind of one of those what-if questions I think we're going to be asking a long time from now.
Yeah, I mean, we still ask it about Brock Lesnar, don't we? I don't see that necessarily changing with Ronda Rousey.
Yeah. Let's see. So finally, we'll kind of round the bend with UFC returns to Mexico this weekend. First event in it seems like months and months and months that we've been UFC free, giving everyone a little few free weekends. But they come back this weekend, and really good, fun, competitive, coin flip in a lot of ways, main event coming, Rafael Dos Anjos against Tony Ferguson. RDA coming off that brutal title loss to Eddie Alvarez earlier this year, and Ferguson coming off a very fun edge to fight out against Lando Venetta, I believe his name was. Can't remember off the top of my head, but very fun fight on FS1, that injury short notice type deal. There's a lot going in for both guys, and RDA, there seems to be a lot of questions about kind of where he's at, given I believe he's changed camps again. Ferguson has looked outstanding in this nice fight streak, a win streak. What are you thinking going into this one?
Yeah, this one is a real kind of a toss-up for me when we came to round to doing our picks. You know, you could see it going a whole bunch of different ways. I ultimately went with Rafael Dos Anjos mainly because, you know, I feel like one of the things I really enjoy about watching Tony Ferguson is how many chances he's willing to take, and how he'll just kind of, you know, he's going to throw a barrel roll out there at you. And I admire that. I enjoy that from like a visual, you know, fan perspective. But I also think against a guy like RDA, you might barrel roll your way right into trouble. I also think, you know, if you're in against that guy in a 5-round fight in Mexico City, you know, gas tank wise, he's never shown you any reason to think that he won't still be going hard in the fourth or fifth round. For Ferguson, you know, who knows if he can actually keep up with that, especially under that pressure that Dos Anjos brings.
And there's a lot of questions about if you know, the winner gets a gets another crack at a 155-pound title. Where does Khabib Nurmagomedov fit in this whole mix? Obviously, his fight coming up in New York in a couple weeks. And obviously, it depends on really what happens with Eddie and Connor in the main event. And, you know, if Connor wins, what belt does he want to defend and win and all this? How would you kind of like to see see the lightweight division play out here over the next year?
Well, yeah, it's really a matter of if Conor McGregor wins, then he'll probably get to do whatever he wants whenever he wants to, you know, and there's good indication to think that he might rather stick around at lightweight than keep going down and making that cut to featherweight, especially after all this time. You know, and there are so many good contender fights that you could make there at lightweight, but also it would not be at all out of the question for him to say, you know what, rubber match with Nate Diaz, let's do it for the lightweight belt. And in the current climate we're in, you know, that as kind of ridiculous as that would be, it would be completely thinkable. You know, it'd be something you could completely envision happening. So he's kind of the wild card there. If he wins that fight, and plus who knows, you know, what he's going to decide to do in his immediate future, then good luck with the thinking that I'll just win enough fights and eventually it'll have to give me the lightweight title shot, because that kind of thinking won't really work anymore.
Do you like the trend of champions now essentially calling out their own shots and looking for money fights as opposed to kind of waiting for the next guy in line and the natural progression of quote unquote traditional sports? Do you like what's going on now? Do you think it's gone too far in one direction, or what do you think about everything that's going on?
You know, I kind of feel like the same way that Brian Stan was talking about feeling. I talked to him when we did kind of a story about this before the Dan Henderson Michael Bisping fight, and he was like, you know, I like it when I like it. When it results in a matchup that maybe doesn't make the most logical ranking sense, or that maybe I would not have thought was coming down the line at us, but I look at the matchup and I think, well, that's just fun. That's exciting. You know, Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz is a pretty good example of that. Then you don't mind. Then you think, all right, cool, I'm with it. And then when it results in a fight, or even just talk of a fight that where it just seems a little bit too ridiculous to you, or it's foregoing a fight that you really would like to see, then you don't like it so much. And so that's kind of how I feel about it. I feel like we're still kind of plumbing around trying to find the bottom, trying to find exactly how absurd some of this stuff can get. And I understand where a lot of these guys are coming from. You know, when Tyron Woodley is talking about how, you know, he doesn't really think that he wants to be constrained by fighting the number one contender. He wants to fight somebody who's going to get him paid. When Michael Bisping is doing it, I understand where they're coming from. But I also think that that's where the responsibility is a little bit on the promoter to make sure this doesn't get completely ridiculous, that we're still moving some of these divisions forward, especially in the divisions where you have a lot of great options like middleweight.
Yeah, and you're right. I think that is on the UFC to make sure that these guys can be in a position, the champions can be in a position to say, I'll take on anyway because I'm making money no matter what, right? I mean, the fact that they're going out and calling out certain guys because they're looking for money fights, it's just it in these divisions like lightweight and 185 pounds and all this, where, yeah, you get this logjam, and especially then someone gets hurt. I mean, that just kind of extends this time of not seeing the best versus the best, and again, this natural progression and kind of this, it's almost like you're following along a TV show, but for some reason the main character has to be written off for a while, so you don't really get a resolution of a storyline. Then they come back, and it's just like you want to be able to see these things kind of carry out, your questions answered, and then you move on to the next set. And I think that some of these fights are a lot of fun when it comes right down to it. I think a lot of us tend to grumble when we first hear them. We're just like, oh, you know, Henderson and Bisping, how does this work and all this? And all of a sudden it happens. You're like, oh, that was satisfying. It had a conclusion and more stories out of this and blah, blah, blah. But still, I think there's this whole thing of what about these other contenders, especially when there's a backfill. And I mean, that's a good problem to have, but I think we're going to have it more and more as the year goes on.
Yeah, and I think that maybe that's one of the kind of virtues of the faults of the UFC is that while it does exert a whole lot of control, and that sometimes that control can feel tyrannical to some of the fighters, one of the good sides about that, for the fans at least, is that it has the power to kind of tell people, okay, here's what you're doing, here's who you're fighting. And you don't get some of the problems that we have seen in boxing over the years, where everybody becomes a promotion unto themselves and are just trying to keep it going for as long as they can before they actually have to do the hard stuff. And the UFC in the past has been pretty good about putting together those tough competitive fights, and they don't give anybody too easy of a road. And I think, though, once you start to see a lot of guys show, hey, as long as you keep me at the top and don't do anything to disrupt what I got going on here, I can make you a lot of money. That's where I think you get into kind of a concerning territory.
Mm. Anything else in this Mexico card stand out of note to you? Obviously, Diego Sanchez coming, returning back. We'll see if he's got anything left in the tank against the debuting Marcin Held. Ricardo Lamas is also on the show. Sam Alvey fights for the latest time. That he's fought, I think, three times in the past 6 months, four times, something like that. And some interesting names, but there's a lot of, you know, names that you really don't know a lot about. What else stands out to you on the show?
Well, for what it is, it's a really good card for, you know, a mostly Fox Sports 1 Ultimate Fighter finale. Usually I hear the words, you know, tough Latin America ultimate, you know, tough Latin America 3 finale. And I just heave a great big sigh. And you look at this one, and it's a really good card for that kind of situation. Did you see we had the video on MMA Junkie at the little media day where Diego Sanchez and Marcin Held kind of get in each other's faces? And, you know, if you hadn't seen any of Diego Sanchez's fights lately, you'd think that he was exactly the same as he was 10 years ago. The intensity is going to be the last thing to go for that guy. And you get the sense that he absolutely believes it. It's not that he's not putting on an act there. You know, you look at him there and you just think, that is not a guy who is ready to go quietly into the night.
Yeah, and I, as we're talking, during the weigh-ins are happening, and he apparently he put on quite a show there as well. So certainly a showman. He has not been on the right side of the win ledger here in a while. With I guess as far as his future, and you never like to tell guys to win to retire and all that. Another bad quick loss, or are we trying to kind of put the pressure, hoping that he maybe hangs it up, or in this case, is he going to be one of those guys that fights into his 40s or something like that?
Well, it'll be interesting since he comes from that cast, the first Ultimate Fighter, and you know we saw Forrest Griffin got one of those deals where we'll pay you to stay home. Sounds like maybe the new owners are not really interested in doing that, not really interested probably in continuing those, probably definitely not interested in handing out any more. He seems like one of those guys where the UFC might give him a little more rope than they give somebody else, but I would not be at all surprised to see him end up in Bellator.
Mm, very true, very true. Before I let you go, we've been great with your time, and tell people kind of where they can interact with you on the social medias. And also stuff you have coming up and co-main event podcast. The floor is yours to promote.
Yeah, sure. Well, we got the co-main event podcast every Monday. Then we have a newsletter that is super easy to unsubscribe from. And other than that, you can follow me on Twitter at BenFolksMMA. And I'm on Facebook, but leave me alone. I don't want to talk to you there. And my stuff's on MMA Junkie.
And that newsletter is the Breakfast of Champions. I do love that the selling point is that you can unsubscribe easily. It's a good promotional tool.
Well, yeah, we'll leave you alone just as you say the word, and we'll never talk to you again.
And did you answer Chuck Mendenhall's Twitter question from for your Twitter mailbag as far as whether or not you have actually used your ass to clean off a park bench that may be rainy?
I think we all know the answer to that question. I think Chuck knows it. Chuck has looked in my eyes. He knows the answer to the question. No, I'm not doing that.
Exactly. Good stuff. Well, Ben, we appreciate the time, and thanks so much for joining Josh Nason's Punch Out this week.
Hey, my pleasure.
All right. Big thanks to Ben Folks for stopping by. Obviously, you can follow him on Twitter, as he mentioned. Very easy to find. And also all kinds of good stuff he writes. He writes, you know, weekly columns, and obviously we'll include the UFC investor stuff as well. Interesting stuff. Even if you're not a complete business head when it comes to stuff and not really into a lot of that, it's kind of cool to try to understand a lot about one of the reasons that, you know, the business is such a big part of this game is because it helps kind of shape the path of where we're going to go, you know, and I think a lot of us are kind of wondering where we are going to go with this new deal, the new owners, and are we going to see less events next year? As Front Row Brian has reported his Twitter, and he's heard a lot about that, with less international events, focus on more domestic. What does that mean for, obviously, the TV deal coming up here in 2018, and how does that look? How's that process look? And we're actually going to have some guests on either later this year or early next year. They're going to help all of us understand that process a little bit more, and that should be a lot of fun. But again, there's so many things going on, so many questions, that even if you look through that deck for a cursory knowledge of kind of how UFC's thinking, what they're thinking, and what their plan is going forward, it's really helpful stuff. What I really hope at some point, and I'm not holding my breath in this, and I talked to Ben about this, as you heard, with some sort of press conference, some sort of talk, some sort of something where we can ask questions and reporters can ask questions of this group and just kind of understand the plan a little bit more. It's still crazy to me that we haven't had anything yet to meet these new owners of a $4 billion enterprise that they bought. And hopefully, you know, I think 2017 is going to be an incredible news year, and hopefully it's going to be one that's positive. It's hard, going to be hard to top 2016, but, you know, every time we think we've seen it all, something changes. Let's see. Last night on Bellator, let's see. We had a light heavyweight title change. Phil Davis defeating, I almost said Emmanuel Newton. Told you that sleep deprivation stuff is real. Liam McGeary beating him pretty, I'd say, dominant one-sided fashion. Unanimous decision, took the belt home. And as I mentioned on Twitter, the celebrations when these guys win these Bellator titles, it seems so understated, so kind of low-key. And I get they're not the UFC, but a lot of these guys, when they, for the most part, when they win titles in Bellator, it's just kind of like, okay, that's cool. You know, it doesn't really seem like a big thing to them for whatever reason. And I just noticed this in the title celebrations afterwards, just kind of ho-hum, you know, just whatever. So it's interesting stuff. I always just see that. And again, subconsciously, I'm sure these guys know it's not the big time, but you would like to kind of see him have a little bit more, you know, excitement and so on. But it was overall, you know, the show was okay. There was a lot of quick finishes. Obviously, Paul Daly being out due to some weight cutting issues physically. I guess he made weight, but, you know, some of the physical toll on that. And that's, you know, you never like to hear that stuff. But the show was, you know, it was okay overall. We're getting into our stretch where Bellator likes to do a bunch of events in a row. And, you know, we have Benson Henderson and Michael Chandler coming up. So there's some interesting fights coming up on the calendar for them. You know, getting these titled champions and contenders that are more well known, obviously that's of huge importance to them. That just kind of helps them reach that the MMA fan base even more. You know, some of the hardcores trying to get them to watch more, and even if you get some of those casual fans that may have heard of a name, I think that's obviously what they're banking on with Tito Ortiz and Chael Sonnen coming up in January. And boy, does Tito Ortiz struggle with doing promos. My God, Chael is so just fluid. And I think for a long time, we always kind of, a lot of people associate Tito with being able to talk the talk, and you knew the pro wrestling game and all that. But these promos with Chael, man, he is not, it's more laughing than it is, getting fired up for a fight. This seems more like a business business transaction, as opposed to two guys that are really, you know, going in there to fight. And I don't know, that's my instincts, or that's kind of the impression I'm getting so far. So we'll obviously see how this unfolds. So far, the promotion, it's, you know, not been great, but we still got a long ways to go before we get Sonnen and Ortiz. And of course, we have UFC 205 coming up next week. All bets are out the window for that one. That is going to be should be on paper, knock on wood, a tremendous night. I think we need it. And I think after a long stretch of no UFC, obviously with the UFC event coming up tonight, that show from top to bottom should deliver. I really hope it does deliver. And I think we have a lot of news stories coming out of it, and a lot of guidance on where we're going to go, especially what is exactly going on with Conor McGregor, which always seems to be the question with a lot of these things. And with McGregor, he's teasing that something is coming or some announcement, rumors that he's going to be taking extended time off, which, of course, WME doesn't want to hear. So we'll have to see. And as always, Conor and the way the sport's changing, Conor's this game in the palm of his hand more so at any point in time in his career, even after that first loss to Nate Diaz. So, I'm going to go get some sleep or some coffee or do something. I appreciate you guys stopping by. Thanks you to Ben Folks for dropping in for half an hour. Hopefully we'll get him on at some point again in 2017, maybe talk a little bit more about how he got to MMA Junkie, because there's a lot of the stories that even I don't know. So it's kind of curious to hear about that stuff. And we'll just start getting ready for a new show next week with UFC 205. We'll talk all about that show and, you know, whatever news happens in the over the weekend and the week itself. So, again, thanks to Ben Folks. Thanks to all you guys for sticking it out and dropping by and stopping back in. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.